Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday morning. It's July 9th. Currently, we've got 65 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City Airport reporting 67 degrees. And on the phone with the ABC Forecast Center, we have meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. As we take a look at your forecast on this Thursday, look for mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies as we go throughout the afternoon hours. Very slim chance of a pop-up shower or storm trying to develop in the afternoon hours, but most of us will stay dry. Temperatures will climb into the mid to upper 80s in Park City. We'll see those numbers climbing into the low 90s for us in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Friday, that ridge of high pressure, that heat dome to our south, begins to move our way, so we'll start to see a nudge in those temperatures. Daytime highs on your Friday with mostly sunny skies will likely climb to around 90 degrees in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid-90s fours in the Heber Valley. Now, that heat dome, it does center itself right over Utah just in time for our weekend. So Saturday and Sunday is when we're expecting the peak of the heat to move into the area. Get ready for highs to climb into the mid-90s for us again in Park City on your Saturday. We're going to be seeing high temperatures around the triple-digit mark in the Heber Valley. But it gets even warmer. I think the peak of the heat arrives officially on our Sunday. That's when we're going to be looking at high temperatures in the upper 90s, approaching 100 in Park City. And we'll see those high temperatures around 103 to 104 in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into Monday, it's still going to be pretty hot as that heat dome begins to shift just a little bit to the east. We'll still see those highs climbing into the mid-90s in Park City. Highs will be into the upper 90s to around 100 in the Heber Valley. Now, after that, that heat ridge begins to shift to the east. That'll allow for a little monsoon moisture to try to sneak into the state. So we could see a couple of isolated showers and storms as early as next Tuesday and the Wednesday, but I think the better chance will actually occur after the middle of next week. Either way, it'll start to level off those temperatures, so highs will only be into the low 90s in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures only in the mid to upper 90s in the Heber Valley as we get towards next Tuesday and Wednesday. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Well, stay tuned. This morning, coming up, we'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Tanya Hansen. She'll recap yesterday's meeting. The director of TedFest, Ryan Shoup, calling in with details about this year's three-day music festival in Wallsburg. And from Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang with a preview of some upcoming special screenings. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. The future of education may look less like a lecture hall and more like a virtual job site. Guests today include CEO of Interplay Learning, Doug Donovan, explaining how technology is preparing the next generation for high-demand trades. Then from artificial intelligence to gene editing, best-selling author Stephen Kotler explores the extraordinary technologies transforming our future and the human qualities that we will need to keep pace. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, heard, of course, every Thursday from 9 to 10. A mostly untouched western Summit County ranch is now public land. But community leaders disagree, sometimes strongly, over how much public access to allow. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports an elk killing brought the issue into stark relief.
The Summit County Council took public comment on recreation plans for the 910 Ranch in June. For Leslie Miller, who's the personal partner of the former property owner, it was a chance to voice a wide range of concerns. She criticized several things, including the county's handling of injured wildlife.
Staff's decision to shoot a struggling bull elk at nightfall.
After the June 24th meeting, the Summit County Sheriff's Office says county leaders asked law enforcement to look into the circumstances surrounding some of Miller's allegations. That meeting included the sheriff, county manager, and Jess Kirby, the county's top public land staff member. The sheriff's office investigation took less than a week and closed without any charges. But the events surrounding the elk killing point to a rift between county leaders and some who've enjoyed access to the 910 Ranch while it was still private property. Summit County purchased its 8,600 acres for $55 million in January. The property north of Jeremy Ranch is still closed to the general public until Kirby and her staff finalize management policies. Those policies will require Summit County to balance wildlife protection and human use, the main spot of local contention. Miller has criticized the county's land management publicly before. She and others who previously had privileged access to the 910 have strong feelings about what's best for it under public ownership. And that includes future county leadership. Attorney Christy Babalis, the unopposed Council District 4 nominee, was one of the people who found the elk Miller referenced. Babalis confirmed she was hiking on the 910 Ranch with three others August 31st, 2025. At that time, Summit County was leasing the ranch land prior to purchasing it. The hikers had found an elk stuck in a muddy spring and called people who worked on the ranch to help. The sheriff's office says members of the group tried to remove the elk from the mud. Babalis says she herself did not touch the elk. Wildlife is property of the state of Utah, so it can be a crime to touch or disturb wildlife without notifying state officials. After reviewing those events 10 months later, the sheriff's office said it and the Utah Department of Natural Resources decided not to pursue further criminal investigations. Back in August, Kirby encountered Babalis and the other hikers leaving on East Canyon Road. Both sides later described the interaction as heated. A recording of the exchange shows Babalis asked Kirby why she didn't do anything about the elk when Kirby had also seen it that afternoon. Kirby later telling KPCW,
I did do what I was supposed to do. I reported it to my warden, who then reported it to the DWR. It is not my job, nor is it any citizen's job, to save wildlife. It is the job of the Department of Wildlife to do that. And it was rutting season, and they get gored. And I hate to say it, but I said it to Christy that night. You cannot save them all. This is nature, and this is how they do it.
And later that night, three shots rang out across the 910 Ranch. A DNR spokesperson told KPCW the agency asked the county's open space warden to put down the elk since it could not stand and may have been suffering. County and DNR records show the elk had sustained chest trauma and a puncture wound. Investigators found no injuries consistent with poaching. They believe the elk was injured during the rut or mating season when male elk often lock antlers. Although Babalis and Miller may disagree with the decision to kill the elk, that's just one part of their broader concern with the 910 Ranch's trajectory under county ownership. Here's Babalis.
Yes, I'd like to see it as a wildlife preserve, but that's me and a whole bunch of other people. That's just my opinion. I'd like to see it as a wildlife preserve. I'd rather see it as a wildlife preserve than, you know, as a property that has paved parking for 240 cars and trails all up and down the water and all kinds of uses.
Some degree of public access will be required as a condition of the federal grant that helped fund the ranch purchase. Trails wouldn't open until next spring at the earliest, and residents, staff, and county council members have all agreed it's best not to rush. More information about the county's plans for the 910 is available at kpcw.org. Summit County and the David W. Bernalfo Memorial Foundation are financial supporters of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Joining me now on the phone, I have Summit County Council Member Tanya Hansen. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Leslie.
Real quick follow-up. When should we expect to see some of the policies be instituted for the 910 Ranch?
Well, we are taking our time and really being thoughtful about what those policies should be. As Connor just reported, we had a public hearing on June 24th and took public comment regarding what folks would like to see up there. There's a lot of opinions and there's a lot of conversation, and we want to be very thoughtful. I don't think we're going to make any decisions for several months.
Okay, and there's a number of different plans I know that are being worked out on the property, so those will just come to the council kind of one by one?
We've seen overall plans, and some of those plans include things that we need to do because of federal funding on that property. Some of those things are kind of out of our control, and so we need to be very aware of that and balance that with, you know, what we want to see on the property as well.
Okay. Let's see. Last Tuesday, the council met with Morgan County Commissioners to move the boundary between Summit and Morgan. That's near the Stagecoach Estates area. That's north of the Glenwell development. Talk to us a little bit of why did the boundary need moving?
Yeah. So the last Tuesday, we met with the Morgan County Council. And we did a Morgan County and Summit County boundary adjustments on our property lines, on the county lines. As you said, it's in a fairly remote area. It borders the 910 Ranch, Stagecoach Estates, the Preserve, and the Pine Meadow Subdivision. How this problem came to our attention was there's a property owner up there that has a lot, and this problem is throughout that area, where his lot was in both Summit County and Morgan County, and he wanted to build a cabin, and he was unable to get a building permit because of where he wanted to put that cabin, and it bordered, and it was in the middle of both county lines. So our county recorder, Greg Walbach, and his staff started researching this problem and discovered that that incident was throughout this area where people's lots were in both counties. And so he and the Morgan County recorder were researching it, and they decided that the best solution for these property owners was to move county lines. And so on Tuesday night, we met with Morgan County. There was a public hearing, and we voted to amend our county lines. And so the county borders are no longer in the middle of people's lots. It goes around people's lots to make it better for them to be able to use their property the way they see fit.
So whose county grew and whose shrunk?
I would say a little of both. It balanced out. There was no big give or take. It was balanced.
Yeah. So what county did the property owners think that they were in? Did they understand that they were in both?
Yes, because the plot map showed they were in both counties. They knew this was a problem.
Okay, and are all the property owners happy? I mean, did they get to go into the county that they were hoping to be in?
Oh, I don't know that. You know, not everybody's always happy, so who knows about that. You know, there was a few public comments about, you know, why don't we follow the road and make the adjustment, but it just made better sense to kind of follow those lot lines on the plot map. And so that's what we did.
Okay. Any concern about perhaps losing tax dollars from the properties up there?
No, I don't think the loss would be significant.
Okay. And so what was it like working with your colleagues in Morgan County? I mean, of course, you had to work with them before, after the legislative session where we were dealing with Morgan County about the Summit County having to pay property tax them for the property that's in the 910 Ranch.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate situation that the legislature got involved in, where I think us in Morgan County could have worked that out. But we have a good working relationship with those folks. We see them at UAC and, you know, various events that we attend. So we have a good working relationship with them. Here in the next month, we've invited them to do a tour of the 910 Ranch with us and have lunch. So, and we've gone to Morgan and had lunch with them. So we have a fairly good working relationship.
Okay. A public hearing that was scheduled for yesterday on new rezoning procedures in the Snyderville Basin was canceled shortly before the meeting. How come?
Well, it came to our attention. It was an oversight by staff of scheduling that meeting in the Colville County Courthouse, where, in fact, that meeting should have been in the Richens Building because it was specifically about the Snyderville Basin planning. And so what we like to do is, if subjects are specific, like yesterday we had the Hoytsville Cemetery Board. I mean, that's specific to Eastern Summit County, so that meeting should be in Colville. Anything specific about like the 910 or Snyderville planning, those meetings should be in the Richens Building, and it was simply an oversight by staff.
All right, so this will come back this coming week?
I'm not sure when that will be on the agenda.
All right. Now, what we heard from Community Development Director Peter Barnes is that this rezone could make the Klein-Dolly rezoning process simpler. Can you describe the challenges on that property?
Well, there are a lot of challenges on that property. First of all, it's not zoned for what we would like to see put on that property. That's probably the biggest challenge. And so anything that happens on that property is going to be a rezone. The information in the packet was about how can we make rezoning a little bit easier for applicants. I don't know if that's good or bad. I was interested to hear public opinion and staff opinion on that before I really, you know, have my own opinion. It's good and bad when you change rezone rules.
Right. Now, the Recreation District is hoping to ask voters to approve a bond this November to help fund a new facility on that Klein-Dolly parcel. So this would help them as well, kind of smooth out the process?
That would be my assumption, yes.
All right. A member of the public did show up for the public hearing and was concerned that people couldn't tell from the meeting agenda what the item was even about. Do you share that concern?
Well, there is a little bit of concern there. I mean, if people are not used to reading those type of agenda items and don't understand the code, it can be confusing. Dave Thomas, our deputy county attorney, clarified that it is state statute how that information goes on the agenda. So it's really out of our hands. The verbiage used on the agenda is it's state statute. There was conversation about, well, can't we put in a couple of sentences that would inform the public better? The challenge with that is if I put in two sentences there that make sense to me, it might reflect my personal opinion. And we don't want to be able to do that in our agendas. It needs to be, you know, information neutral. And so that was the discussion yesterday.
Okay, so these government and public hearing notices look the way they do because of state statute?
That's correct.
Okay. As you mentioned, the council appointed some members to the Hoytsville Cemetery Board. You took a particular interest in this, since you say that you visit that graveyard fairly often. So what's the condition like?
Well, I think there's room for improvement in that cemetery. You know, these small cemeteries on the east side of the county are governed by volunteers. And I don't believe the tax levies are substantial enough to really make an impact on some of those cemeteries. The people who are on the cemetery boards are older and, you know, don't get out and maybe care for the cemetery the way a younger person would do that. The road needs to be enhanced. Yesterday, the conversation came to light that they're running out of ground for burials. So they need to be looking at purchasing some property to make that cemetery larger. You know, cemeteries are more interesting and controversial than you would think. I've been quite surprised by that being on the council. It's always an interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm. So is there adjacent property that can be purchased?
Yes, Ivory Homes owns property between the Hoytsville Cemetery and the Hoytsville Church that could be purchased. And they are looking to approach that landowner and buy some property there.
Okay. And is there also some talk then of perhaps having to raise that tax levy?
Well, they seemed pretty comfortable yesterday where they're at. And so, you know, if they think they're in a good place managing it and have enough money to buy property, it's not for me to tell them they need to raise the tax levy.
All right. Let's see. Also, during public comment yesterday, one resident gave public comment about his neighbor in Silver Creek Estates. He lives near a short-term rental that apparently plays loud music at his home from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day. After hearing his concerns, what recourse does he have if the local noise ordinance isn't enforced until 9?
His recourse that we discussed at length yesterday was to really get the sheriff's office involved every time he has this problem and file a complaint. Therefore, it becomes a history of what's going on in that neighborhood. And if it continues, there could be charges, misdemeanor charges to the property owner who is blaring music over there. So it was a lengthy conversation and it was a good conversation. So hopefully this citizen, who feels like he's being harassed by the other property owner, the citizen who's being harassed will take more action and hopefully get this problem resolved.
So is it the property owner or the renters playing the loud music?
He believes it's the property owner. And when there's special events going on too, usually in evenings on weekends, but he said, I mean, his wife also talked to us, and she said when she walks out the door in the morning to walk the dog, the music starts blaring. So they don't know if it's on a motion detector that the music comes on, or if they're being watched so closely as when they leave their house, the music comes on. It sounds like a really contentious, unfortunate situation.
Okay. And it sounds like other people may also be having an issue. Councilmember Candace Hart had noted that some other residents have been considering buying their own decibel meter. would that help?
Well, it could, because, you know, the noise ordinance does reference decibel meters. And if you can prove that the noise is above that decimal reader, it would, you know, it would help his cause, certainly.
Okay. And does the council, do you hear conflicts over noise issues frequently?
No, not a lot. I mean, the sheriff's office probably does, but we don't hear that complaint very often.
Okay. Anything else, Tanya?
No, that's it, Leslie. I hope you have a beautiful day.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Bye.
That's Summit County Council Member Tanya Hansen. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Heber City leaders are debating whether to allow developers to levy special taxes in a neighborhood in the northern section of town. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the council will discuss the proposal once again on July 21st.
The Highlands is a community of over 800 homes under construction near the Utah Valley University Wasatch campus, north of downtown Heber. Developers want to use public infrastructure districts, or PIDs, to help pay for things like roads and utilities in the neighborhood. PIDs enable developers to issue bonds to cover infrastructure costs. The bonds are then repaid using special assessments or property taxes by those who buy property within the district. Max Martin, representing the developer, said at a meeting Tuesday the PIDs will help lower home prices and support affordable housing in the neighborhood.
Attainable housing is our main goal, and then there's no city liability or risk with this PID.
Martin estimates that with the PID, homes would be about $40,000 less expensive, and buyers would see a little over $800 in savings every year. However, property taxes would be more expensive, about $430 per month with a PID, compared to roughly $300 per month without. The development will include 55 affordable townhomes. Infrastructure will cost an estimated $40 million, but the developers anticipate using PIDs to cover a little over half that amount, around $22 million. Additionally, 5 to 10% of the bond dollars would be reserved for public improvements, such as amenities for the park in the neighborhood or extending the paved path along US 40. Mayor Heidi Franco wanted to see a specific list of how the bonds would be spent, but Councilmember Aaron Cheatwood said the structure of this PID looks different from other projects the city has seen, like Jordanelle Ridge.
There is no public benefit. They are buying down the cost of the actual infrastructure, and as a result, they can then afford to build homes for less money.
Council members have had mixed reactions to the proposal. A few locals raised concerns about PIDs during the public hearing portion of the evening. Russ Funk spoke as a county resident, not in his capacity as city engineer. He worried about whether the PIDs would deliver on the promise of lower home prices.
Now, these guys have come in and said, we are going to help with affordability. We're going to take that subsidy and we're going to give it back to the property owners. The only thing I think I want to say is, I think we need to make sure that there's something in the agreement or the documents that enforce that.
And Linda Middleton said she was concerned about the environmental impacts of all the new development in the valley. The council didn't make any decisions Tuesday. It will discuss the plans again July 21st. Heber City is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
The annual two-day music festival, TedFest, returns the weekend of July 17th through the 19th in Wallsburg. On the phone with details is one of the organizers of the festival and director, Ryan Shoup. Good morning, Ryan. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this is the first Ted Fest since your father, Ted Shoup, passed away last fall. Our condolences there. But maybe talk a little bit about how his absence has been felt as you've kind of prepared for this year's festival.
Well, you know, a lot of people have been saying that as we've been talking. They're like, oh, man, I wish Ted were here. He's, you know, he really would know what to do with this. And we really miss his, you know, on the meetings, we really miss Ted's personality, because he was such a vibrant guy and just so full of energy all the time. And so, yeah, we have kind of talked about that, but we're looking for ways at the festival. You know, we want to, you know, find ways to kind of give shout outs to him, some, you know, moments to pay respect. So we're coming up with some ways to, you know, try and put that into the festival this year so we can kind of remember him.
Great. So do you see yourself making changes over time, or is the goal just to basically preserve what your dad created and kind of let it evolve naturally?
I think that is a good question. I think we would, you know, love it to see it grow. I mean, that's kind of the main goal, but I don't know if, you know, we see any, you know, crazy changes. He was just a lover of music in general and really liked supporting the arts. So I think that, you know, one of the main things about Ted Fest is we kind of, highlight the roots music and stuff that kind of comes from that, you know, I guess that kind of area of music. And I think that will stay the same. And because for us, it's important to, you know, to highlight different musical styles and where it came from, you know, that kind of roots music. So that's, I don't see that changing, but obviously, hopefully we get, you know, bigger and be able to provide more, you know, opportunities for other bands, and then also, you know, have more people come and experience it.
Yeah. So give us the details. I mentioned it was July 17th through 19th in Wallsburg, but, you know, when, where, and how much?
Yeah, it's at the Erickson Foundation Ranch in Wallsburg. Some people show up on Thursday night to start setting up their RVs and their tents and stuff, but most people show up on Friday. I think the music starts at 12:30, and then we have bands. There's two stages, and so we kind of alternate between them, and that makes it so the music keeps going pretty quickly. There's not a lot of downtime, dead time. There's another stage where we do some workshops as well. But then it just goes up until, you know, around 10, and then the next morning everything starts. There's a songwriter contest at 9, I think, and then, other stuff going on, and then there's just bands that play all day up until 10 again. And then on, if you camp over on Sunday morning, we have like a free pancake breakfast for everybody that camps over, and then we have kind of a gospel jam, because my mom really likes doing these Sunday gospel jams. And so anyway, most people will just get pancake breakfast and you don't have to jam, but you know, everybody just kind of gathers around and people will say, hey, this is my favorite, you know, song. And then they sing a song and it's just kind of a fun Sunday morning thing. And then the last thing is there is a songwriter contest. So that's kind of fun for people. And there's a band camp where people can come and learn how to play, you know, roots music, more kind of bluegrass a little bit better. So it's a couple of different things that kind of tie into the community.
Yeah, and I'm guessing your dad was instrumental in finding this location. So has the family there kind of let you know that the lease or whatever will continue with the Ted Fest in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, have a pretty good operating with them. They really like us being there. And he did kind of find that. I don't know, somehow he kind of tapped into, they have this power show. I don't know if you've been there, but they have all these cars and motorcycles and power equipment from all sorts, you know, from all, you know, a long time ago, a lot of, you know, through the generations. And they have a kind of a display up there. And so anyway, my dad for some reason lined up finding that they had been doing this power show and wanted to know if they wanted to do music. And then they started building it together. And then we kind of broke off and separated to a different date because they kind of wanted to keep it, you know, do one festival one weekend and another festival the next month, which makes a lot of sense. So, but they've worked really well with us, and I think they really like us being there. So I don't see any friction that we wouldn't stay there. So that's, yeah. I think that's pretty good. And it's a fun place. And
yeah, that art,
a great location.
RW Erickson Power Museum, as it's called. I mean, entry in there is free with your ticket on Saturday. And again, I mean, it's quite something, buildings upon buildings of old stuff. It's really amazing. Yeah. So I have seen it, and I think it's really worth the price of admission in addition to all of the great music. Talk to us a little bit about some of the musical acts you do have lined up.
Okay, so we have, kind of focuses this year, it changes a little bit each year, kind of ebbs and flows, but this year we have some Americana, kind of bluegrass. We've got, but we also have some Celtic, so I'll just name some of the bands. We have Swagger, they're kind of like a Celtic rock band. We've got Susie Brown, she's from Nashville, but she lives here now, and she plays fiddle, and she's, really entertaining. We've got the Pickpockets, they're kind of like a Newgrass band. We have Corey Mon, he's kind of funky and very unique. We've got, I'm playing there with our band, it's kind of rock and bluegrass. And we've got a Latin band, MV Caldera, and there's a bunch of others, like the Beck Brothers, Local Kin. So, people might recognize them, they might not, but it's kind of fun to discover new bands as well. We've got Sam Payne, a singer, a songwriter, Paul Jacobson, and Alicia Stockman coming to do that. She's heavily involved up there in Park City and stuff like that. So it's a good crew, a lot of music.
Okay, you've got the schedule online. That's TedFestMusic.com. How do people get tickets? Because I think you offer both daily and weekend passes. And then in addition, if you're going to camp, you'd need a camping pass.
Yeah, all the kids are free. I think it's 16 and under. And so that's kind of nice. But yeah, just I think the easiest is to do it online, because then you just show up and kind of show your ticket. But yeah, you can either buy a Friday day or a Saturday day. And then you can just buy both of them together for a weekend. And then if you want to camp, it's just a flat fee, and you can camp either day or both days.
Okay. And I'm guessing you're still planning the Saturday night jam when you bring up nearly all of the musicians there.
Yeah, we do kind of a big thing at the end where I kind of host this, and I just start to bring people up, and we do different songs and feature, different people jamming, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a good way to end the festival, and people love it.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, the festival does include some instrument competitions and songwriting contests and workshops. How do people get involved in those?
Probably the easiest is just on the website. There is a link for the songwriter contest, and then there's also a link for the band camp that they want, or if they're interested in that as well. And so those are, I think, the easiest way. The website has like a drop-down menu with a bunch of different.
All right. And why are those educational pieces important to the festival's mission? I mean, was that part of your dad's plan?
Oh, yeah. Well, my dad, one thing he always wanted to do was get, people to learn more about, things. He wanted kids to learn and all that stuff. And so that kind of goes along with the festival's kind of teaching kids, and not even just kids, people in general. He always thought it was never too late to learn, music and to get involved. So I think it's just a way for people to kind of get involved, and so they can come to the festival, they see what's going on, and they say, hey, I want to do that too. And so then they also kind of learn how to do it.
Okay. Ryan, anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so, but I would just say, come on out and support it. It's a great time. We kind of started the festival. I told my dad a long time ago, hey, you should start a festival, because there's, not a lot of festivals in Utah like this. We had been going, traveling around to like Colorado and a bunch of different places, and saw these cool festivals and wanted to kind of bring that same energy here. So, we'd love people to come out and support it.
Okay. Ryan Shoup, again, the festival director of TedFest. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much.
On the phone with an update of some special screenings happening this month, I have the executive director of Park City Film, Katie Wang, on the phone. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's see. We've got a three-night run of Powered Ballad this weekend. I know it's the hottest weekend we could probably see this summer.
Yeah, right. Great time to go to the movies. Yeah, air conditioning.
We do have air conditioning. Is that true?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, once they did the renovation, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, that was the thing that they put into the theater, because those of you that have been here for a little while remember those Sundance screenings where they'd have to like open all the windows and, you know, the fans and stuff, because it would get so hot in there because they couldn't control the HVAC, and then no summer events. So yes, now fully climate controlled. Come on in. Come watch some great movies.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about Power Ballad then.
Okay. Yeah. So this weekend is Power Ballad, July 10th through 12th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And this is a new film from director Carney, who those of us who've been going to the Sundance Film Festival for a while may remember him from Once and Sing Street, kind of a favorite director, people that love music. Paul Rudd is the main actor in it, and he plays a wedding band singer whose late night jam session with a fading boy band star has an unexpected outcome that changes both of their lives. Story about music, self-respect, the price of ambition. I had a chance to catch it at the South by Southwest Film Festival, and people just loved it. Packed houses. So that'll be Friday and Saturday at 7, then again Sunday at 6. Yes, air conditioning, so come on in from the heat. Enjoy a movie, have a nice cool drink, and lots of buttered popcorn. And as you mentioned, we've been having a great... We have a great summer program, so I want to thank everyone for coming out to those. It's a little different. We normally don't program through the summer, but we tried it out this summer, and it seems like it's a good idea, so we'll keep going with that. But July is packed with a lot of partner screenings. Power Ballad's kind of our only weekend, full weekend screening till the end of the month, but we've got lots of special guests, so definitely want people to come on out to the films, but also, you know, I'll give you a little preview. But I would suggest checking the website before you head out, because it's not quite our normal schedule. So don't want you showing up on a Sunday afternoon and being disappointed that your favorite film is not being shown.
Okay. Next week you got a special screening with Ballet West.
Yes. So Ballet West is launching a new event this summer. It's called the Ballet West Summit Festival, and it's July 15th through 17th. And we're thrilled to be partnering with them on that. So our event is on Thursday, July 16th. It's called Raising Voices on Point. So, you know, those of you in the know in the ballet world, that makes sense. But we're going to host two short film screenings. The first one is called 10 Times Better. And this is the story of George Lee, who was the first Asian American dancer at the New York City Ballet. And then the next film is called About Face, Disrupting Ballet. And this is a documentary about dancers Phil Chan and Georgina Pazaquin, who challenged the dance world to get rid of racist Asian stereotypes in classic ballets like the Nutcracker, and, you know, help them evolve so that they continue to be relevant in a more diverse world. So we've got a post-film discussion with Adam Skloot, who's the artistic director at Ballet West. Phil Chan will be there, the directors for About Face, and the producer. We'll also have a reception. It's completely free and open to the public. Showtime is 7 p.m., so we do suggest registering in advance, because the Ballet West Summit is proven to be quite a successful idea, so we want to make sure you get tickets to that. And then we are thrilled that later that weekend, so we take a little bit of a break, and then on the 19th, which is a Sunday of July, we are hosting for the first time the Sundance Film Festival Local Lens Series. And this is a selection of some of the best films from the 2026 Film Festival that will be shown free to Utah locals. So on the 19th, we'll have three screenings, actually, that day. So again, check your calendars. But the first film we're premiering is at 1 o'clock. It's called The Lake. This is a documentary that has had quite a buzz, and I've had lots of emails and phone calls about this, so here it is. And this is a documentary about the Great Salt Lake and the race to save it from environmental collapse. Quite timely and important. The director will be there after the film. 4 o'clock, we have a film called They Dream, and this is a deeply personal documentary that traces how art can become a lifeline in the wake of loss. And then the final film for the day is at 7 p.m., and this is called Union County. And this is a narrative about Cody Parsons, who's assigned to a drug court program, and his journey to recovery amid the opioid epidemic in rural Ohio. Again, director Q&As for all three films. Admission is free for Utah locals, so please sign up in advance. You are limited to 2 tickets per person. We are also in need of some more volunteers to help us sell concessions, usher people in, check people in. So please check out our website at parkcityfilm.org if you'd like to go see the films, help us out before the screenings. We definitely want to, you know, it's a nice community event, so we appreciate the community support on that.
Okay, and you've got a deadline coming up for people who may want to submit a film for the Made in Utah Film Showcase this fall.
Yes, that is also on the 19th. Thank you for mentioning that. So this is our Made in Utah series, which was kind of an offshoot of the the Filmmaker Showcase, started by Jill Orschel about 15 years ago. Those were a collection of short films. In September, we will be having a collection of kind of medium-length films, so that 20 to 40 minute mark. And we are looking for films that are made here in the state of Utah or by Utah-based filmmakers. So please check out our website for that. And the specifications, it's all on Film Freeway. But yes, absolutely looking for more submissions for that. Then we head into the next week, and we're going outside on the Park City Library patio for an all-ages screening of Hoppers, which is about a 19-year-old who uses technology to place her consciousness into a robotic beaver. A fun, environmentally themed film. Showtime's going to be at 8:45, which is basically dusk. Admission and popcorn are free. Bring a blanket, low back chair. I think you guys all know the drill for the outdoor events there, but super fun way to celebrate summer out there on the patio before the holiday. And then on the 25th, we're partnering with the Kelly Brush Foundation for a documentary called Best Day Ever. And this is a doc about the creation of the world's first fully adaptive trail network in Vermont. Greg Durso, who's featured in the film, will be there for Q&A. He'll be talking with you, Leslie, next week as well. Just this film has been knocking it out of the park in the film festival circuit. I mean, pretty much everywhere it's premiered, it has won an award of some kind. Audience award, best doc. I mean, it's exceptional. So please come out to that. Ticket proceeds will benefit the Kelly Brush Foundation. And we'd love to see folks turn out, give us support.
Okay, and what time does that happen at?
It's at 7 o'clock on the 25th. Yep.
Okay.
And then, so yeah, it's a shorter film. Greg will be there for the Q&A, as I mentioned, and then there's a reception afterwards, so you get to meet him, some folks from the Kelly Brush Foundation, but that should be a great event.
Okay, what else have you got?
And then we're kind of rounding up the month, essentially, with another genre film series. So we had America the Beautiful in June, our second genre film series for the summer. Again, we're kind of experimenting this summer with programming. And this is July 31st through August 2nd. And this is the Midnight in Park City series. So those of you that go to film festivals are familiar with that kind of section of the program where it's psychological thrillers, horror movies, kind of for that midnight crowd. But of course, here we are in Park City where the sidewalks roll up at 9 o'clock. So showtime is still at 7 o'clock. So we'll get you home by 9. but we have a preview screening of the Sundance hit Buddy. And that'll be on Friday, July 31st. And this is about a kids' TV show gone wrong. Tickets are free to this event or this film screening, but they are limited. So if you want to come see Buddy, and I highly suggest you do, because again, it's an amazing film. It'll be released later in the summer, so you can kind of have eyes on it first. Please sign up for that early. Then on Saturday, August 1st, we're bringing in Boots Riley's new film, I Love Boosters, which is a delightful satire about quote-unquote fashion-forward philanthropy. And then finally, on Sunday, August 2nd, we're bringing Backrooms in, which has kind of been this summer's hit sensation about a dimension beyond reality. And the director has produced some new content for the film. So you can see a slightly different version than what you might have seen in theaters already, since the film is out for release right now. But just kind of a fun collection, mix it up a little bit, show a genre of films that we don't typically show at Park City Film, but we know we have an audience for. So bring your friends and family and experiment with that. And then kind of last but not least, before I talk to you again, we have another outdoor screening on the Park City Library patio, a free screening of Going Varsity in Mariachi, which is an awesome film. It's part of our Cine en Español series. It's a doc about the competitive world of high school mariachi. It premiered here in 2023 at the Sundance Film Festival. Again, 8:45, and admission and popcorn are free. So yeah, lots coming up.
Okay.
For sure.
Anything else you want to mention?
Just check out parkcityfilm.org. You know, some are free, some are not. Mm-hmm. Check out all the details. It's a little bit of a different schedule, but we're super excited and really appreciate all the partnerships we've been able to bring together for this month. So we look forward to seeing you all at the movies with air conditioning.
Okay. Katie, thanks.
Thank you.
Katie Wang is the executive director of Park City Film. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Park City Council will discuss the next steps for the Senior Center and Little Kate improvements at its meeting today. The council will return to these two closely watched projects. The city has been planning a new Senior Center for several years. Its future home is at the Milwini parking lot across from the Park City Library. The council's latest direction on the project was to design a 13,000 to 15,000 square foot building with only surface parking. Now, City Manager Adam Lenhart says staff is looking for direction on a preliminary concept.
We'll be asking the council for direction to move forward in schematic design, which would include the overall floor plan, square footage, dimensions of the building.
The current concept is a two-story building with a dining area and activity rooms. Lenhart said once the preliminary design is finalized, the city will have a more accurate cost estimate. The project could cost the city up to $15 million. The council will also get an update on Little Kate Road. The city had originally planned a 12-foot multi-use pathway for the road. After residents raised concerns about pedestrians and cyclists sharing the sidewalk, the city rolled back those plans. Residents shared more feedback on four comp sets at a June open house. Deputy City Manager Jody Emery says the public prefers either a minimal roadway change called Concept 1A or no change at all.
Concept 1A is really similar to the existing road, and it provides a wider painted buffer between bike and vehicle travel lanes. I think that's the greatest upgrade there. And the existing sidewalk as part of this could either stay the same or be slightly widened.
The council will give staff direction on how to proceed on both projects. Both of them are work session items, so there will not be opportunities for public comment today. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Well, Park City's Egyptian Theater is warning others after hackers recently stole tens of thousands of dollars. KPCW's Christine Weller reports no donor information was compromised in the scheme.
The Egyptian Theater on Park City's Main Street was recently hit with some bad news. Theater manager Randy Barton said a hacker accessed the nonprofit's bank account, taking more than $60,000.
A week ago, we just got notice that $65,000 was missing from our account that had been wired to someone that we had no idea who they were.
Barton said the attack was sophisticated. Normally, the Egyptian receives email transaction notifications, but the scammer hacked that, too.
They had been able to get into the email also and put in some scenarios that if you receive an email from Zions Bank, forward it to this email address. So we didn't find out about it.
Barton said the wire fraud was discovered because the hackers got greedy. Someone had called the bank trying to increase the wire amount. That's when the bank flagged the transaction as suspicious. It's unclear if insurance will cover the loss, but Barton said it's a big setback regardless. As a nonprofit, much of that money came from donors and grants. However, he said no donor information was compromised. Park City Police Lieutenant Danielle Snelson said the department is investigating the wire fraud. She said it regularly deals with scammers asking for money through wire transfers, various apps, and cryptocurrency. Snelson's best advice to avoid scams and hackers is to slow down.
A lot of times the scammers will pressure you to act quickly. They'll tell you that your accounts will be shut off or your phone will be shut off if you don't do this within the next 30 minutes.
Snelson said scam emails are becoming more common. If payment is requested through email, she says people should go directly to the source to be sure it's real. The same goes for callers claiming to be from the bank. Hang up and call a trusted bank number instead. Snelson also warns against clicking links in emails and text messages.
If you click on that link, they could potentially access your phone directly, which would lead to them accessing accounts and things like that.
Snelson suggests regularly checking financial accounts to catch potential fraud early. She said acting fast is your best chance to stop the theft and prevent further damage. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And triple-digit temperatures are in the forecast for most of the state this weekend, including parts of the Wasatch Back. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has the latest.
The National Weather Service shows the Heber Valley will be over 100 degrees by Sunday, and Park City will reach the upper 90s. The Weather Service has issued an extreme heat watch from midday Saturday through late Sunday. ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes says the high temperatures can be life-threatening if residents aren't prepared.
That is a dangerous heat risk right there for most of the area. That means, yes, if you're not taking the necessary precautions, you could become susceptible to some of the heat dangers out there. So be very careful and plan ahead for this weekend.
Health experts urge residents to drink plenty of water, avoid extended time outdoors, stay in air-conditioned spaces, and check on neighbors. Children and pets should not be left in vehicles where temperatures can become deadly within minutes. Ahead of the extreme heat wave, Summit and Wasatch counties have not designated cooling centers for the weekend. However, libraries and other government buildings will be open normal hours. Other resources to weather the high temperatures are available by calling 211 or visiting 211utah.org. Hot weather continues Monday, with highs reaching the upper 90s across the Wasatch Back. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And the Swanner Preserve and Eco Center has a busy lineup of summer programs and free events. The preserve's been bustling with wildlife this spring and early summer, including the arrival of sandhill crane colts and moose calves. More than wildlife is drawing visitors. Swanner Exhibits Director Hunter Klingensmith says a variety of educational and family-friendly events are on tap. The first is Be Nice to Bugs Day. That's happening this Sunday.
That's a family program. It's a drop-in activity anytime between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. We'll have Christy Bills, the entomologist from the Natural History Museum of Utah, there with some live insects and some specimens. We'll be making potato bug terrariums, and we have some other fun bug-themed activities. So great for all ages. Anyone who's interested in bugs or insects and wants to learn more should come.
The Eco Center will also team up with Basin Recreation and the Summit Bike Share Program for the return of the Bike and Botany Program Thursday, July 16th. Registration is required just to make sure that there are enough bikes available. And tickets are also on sale for the annual fundraiser, Wine Among the Willows. The Eco Center also launching a new pilot program, opening its doors at 8 a.m. on the third Saturdays of both July and August. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.